It is Wednesday, March 13th, 2013, and this is Ozarks at Large. I'm Antoinette Grajeda.
And I'm Kyle Kellums. Support for KUAF comes from the Northwest Arkansas Business Journal, featuring real estate, agents, firms, and teams in the March 18th edition, plus local business news in Northwest Arkansas. The current edition is available at 725-0394 or nwabusinessjournal.com. where you can also register for the daily business e-news.
Ahead on this edition of Ozarks, we pay a visit to a local aspiring comic artist in his home studio.
Plus, two members of the Arkansas legislature discuss overriding Governor Beebe's vetoes, and one of the largest foundations in the world and the University of Arkansas celebrate the conclusion of a successful partnership.
But first, Arkansas lawmakers, health policy experts, physicians, and the representatives from the National Governors Association announced today their new guidelines for prescription drug and painkiller administration in emergency rooms. Dr. Paul Halverson, director and state health officer for the Arkansas Department of Health, says Arkansas is one of seven states that is part of the new initiative.
This is not just a national problem, this is an Arkansas problem. Last year, the crime lab did over 1,250 autopsies, and as we looked at the cause of death for people that were subject to the autopsies, the primary cause of death in one out of nine cases was related to prescription or illicit drugs or a combination thereof.
The 17-point guideline will help establish rules for doctors to use when prescribing medications to their patients in the emergency room.
Google, the internet search engine giant, will pay out $7 million to 37 states, including Arkansas, after an agreement was reached yesterday in regard to the company's collection of consumer data over unsecured wireless networks. About 3 years ago, Google Street View Cars collected the data while taking pictures for the search engine's Maps application. Deputy Attorney General Jim Dupree says the state is fine with the settlement.
This is protecting the privacy of consumers from our point of view, and also an opportunity to remind consumers that it's in their own best interest to take action to protect their own privacy.
As part of the agreement, Google will conduct a national education campaign to teach consumers how to protect personal information. Google is also agreeing to destroy any data collected and not make use of it, nor will it collect similar information in the future. The state will receive about $115,000 as part of the overall settlement.
The Fayetteville Advertising and Promotion Commission earlier this week moved forward with a proposal to provide funding for a regional park complex in southwest Fayetteville. The plan would net $3.2 million for the project through an extension of sales tax bonds originally issued for construction of the Fayetteville Town Center. Marilyn Hefner is the director of the Fayetteville A&P Commission.
We're hoping that this will jumpstart the regional park project, and the city has some money in reserve right now that they could use to, you know, start that project, and we hope, you know, that the voters would approve us continuing that project for them.
The $21 million project has been on the books since 2000 when the city started developing a parks master plan. The regional park would be built in phases and would eventually include soccer fields, a great lawn, baseball and softball fields, and an outdoor amphitheater. But before any shovels hit dirt or money changes hands, the issue must go to the city council.
The city council is the one that sets the ordinance for the election, so we may have to come back and, you know, do a little more tweaking on the actual wording of our recommendation to them, but we ask that that be forwarded to the city council.
The A&P Commission also approved a funding request for an expansion to the Walton Arts Center. We'll have more on that in the coming days.
A settlement has been reached with a Fayetteville roofing company that the state's attorney general says took money from residents for roofing repairs but never completed the work. In a press release issued yesterday, Attorney General Dustin McDaniel announced a settlement with Sean Redman, owner of the now-defunct Razor Fast Roofing and Razorback Roofing, to pay more than just $109,000 in fines and costs to the state and just more than $28,000 in restitution to 19 homeowners in northwest Arkansas. Last year, Redman was found guilty in Washington County Circuit Court on multiple counts of theft by deception and was ordered to pay restitution to consumers in that case as well.
The month of February brought all-time monthly records for wagering on electronic games of skill at Arkansas's two racetracks. According to Talk Business Arkansas and the latest statistics by the Arkansas Racing Commission, casino-style EGS wagers at Hot Springs-based Oaklawn and West Memphis-based Southland racetracks rose nearly 14% for the month when compared to February 2012. itself. Oaklawn raked in nearly $93 million in wagers for the month, at 13.7% increase from the previous year, while Southland netted more than $197 million in EGS wagers. For the first 2 months of 2013, the two racetracks have brought in more than $518 million in the on-site casino-style gaming.
The city of Bella Vista has been ranked among the safest places to live in the country. According to NeighborhoodScout.com, a real estate industry website that uses location-based data and risk analysis information, the city's low crime rate has much to do with the ranking. The site reports fewer than one violent crime is committed per 1,000 residents, and nearly seven property crimes per 1,000 residents are committed annually. According to the site, almost four violent crimes per 1,000 people are committed in the entire country. That's lower than the Arkansas average of almost five violent crimes per 1,000 people.
The Fort Smith City Visitors Bureau has announced the lineup for this year's Fort Smith Riverfront Blues Festival, set for June 21st and 22nd. Headlining acts include Eric Sardinas and Mark Albertson with Wanda Watson for Friday night. And Saturday night will be closed by blues legend Johnny Winter and area favorite Oreo Blue.
The Razorback baseball team dominated Alabama A&M yesterday in Fayetteville. Final score was 20-2. Diamond Hogs finished with a season-high 20 runs, school record 19 walks. The 15th-ranked Razorbacks are now 12-5, while A&M Bulldogs drop to 2-16.
Tonight, partly cloudy with lows from 31 degrees in northwest Arkansas to 36 in the Arkansas River Valley. Tomorrow, mostly sunny with highs in the upper 60s to lower 70s. And tomorrow night, partly cloudy with lows in the lower to mid 40s.
This is Ozarks at Large. The Arkansas legislature continues to meet in Little Rock. Hundreds of bills were introduced just before the deadline. Two bills that have been passed into law have been vetoed by Governor Mike Beebe. Both of those have been overridden by the legislature. This past week, Roby Brock from our content partner Talk Business Arkansas talked with two legislators about what those vetoes mean. He sat down with Ann Clemmer, a Republican from Benton, and Reginald Murdoch, a Democrat from Marianna.
I kind of want to go into some psychology of what goes into a veto override to begin with before we kind of dive into some of the subject matter of the week. Do you count noses? Do you know what the vote's going to be before it goes? How does this roll around? What's going on behind the scenes?
Well, let me say I can answer that pretty easily. We felt like we had our caucus 100% in favor of this. So for us, it was like, is everybody going to be here? Is anybody going to be sick? Is anybody not going to be here? So we had to certainly count the 51 members that we have. And, of course, we were hoping for a few D's to come over.
Right, because
and we did
it passed by a large majority.
Sure.
When it came through the first time. But the override, you saw quite a few votes peel off. Why
right.
was that, Representative Murdoch?
Well, I think that politics was in order. I mean, you know, I think that after the first vote, I think the governor, who obviously vetoed it, he was working the numbers as well, just like they were on their side. He was working them on his side, and he got with some of the legislators that had voted in favor and, you know, asked them to support him on his veto.
Was this a great victory for Republicans in terms of national image? Was this a big setback for Arkansas in terms of national image? What's your viewpoints on this?
Well, I mean, first of all, I mean, if you go by the reports that you get, and I think depends on where you're at on this, you're getting reports that says that it's embarrassing, that it's kind of shameful what happened. And if you look at the New York Post, I think it's New York Times, maybe, that put out a piece that talked about that, you know, what happened in Arkansas was shameful, that we're going to be in litigation and that it's going to be overturned and that, you know, that we're wasting taxpayer dollars. That's their view on it, as well as many others that think that we probably went down a road that's not very, was not very legally correct anyway.
And I'd suggest you probably have a different viewpoint.
Very much so. I mean, we felt like it was a great victory. I mean, I think This issue, more than any other, shows the real cultural divide in this country between a lot of the southern states and maybe the rest of the country. But this is something, I mean, it's completely different response you get. But I mean, when I'm in Saline County, I mean, it's people are hugging me, coming up to me, crying, thanking me for running this bill. It is different, but we are not like the rest of the world, and I think this bill makes a statement. The poll that Talk Business did said we had 60% of Arkansans behind this bill.
Right, 33% opposed to it. Those numbers were very striking. I think that might speak more largely to just where you stand in the pro-life, pro-choice debate. Maybe not. I think if we polled
We
did poll the 12-week question, but I think we would have gotten a similar response on just about anyone, just my gut instinct
probably.
So, well, let's talk about the legal ramifications here. Obviously, the ACLU has already said that they're considering a legal challenge to this. Other groups have made waves as well. What's the legal argument, Representative Clemmer, for defending this bill as being either constitutional or obeying previous legal precedent?
Well, I think the argument is that Arkansas law, and I haven't heard very much about this, but that we declared that a person in utero existed at 12 weeks in utero, 1999 Arkansas statute in the Unborn Victims Act. And we are saying we have declared this 12-week-old fetus a person, this baby is a person, and should be protected.
What do you think about the legal challenge?
Well, and I think that's the very question, and that's the question is at hand. And certainly, I'm not an attorney, but what we're told is the constitutionality, the legal part of it, is that it violates that. You know, that these particular laws, this one and the other one that was passed, will violate the Constitution, and it's an unconstitutional act that's been passed by our legislature. And it's not that Democrats or other people are not pro-life. I mean, you know, I don't think because you believe in choice that you're not pro-life. I think that's a myth. You know, I've got a lot of emails talking about, you know, if you don't vote for this, then you don't love God, you're not a Christian, you're not a good person. That's not the case. I don't, you know, take it that way. I think part of our duty, if I was not a legislator, possibly, if I thought that, if I felt a certain way, if I was not a legislator, that I have to protect the state fiscally and otherwise, then on an issue such as this, such as a social issue, then you can make a different choice. But I think as a legislator, we had a different choice that we had to make, and because of the law and what we were told about the law and the possible unconstitutionality of this, that we needed to be very careful in making a decision. And I think we're stewards in our current position. We're stewards as well.
The other bill that you referenced that became law too with the governor's override, a veto override, was the 20-week bill, the pain capable abortion bill. Just this past week, about 2 days ago, the federal judge in Ohio struck down that state's law.
Wasn't that Idaho?
It was in Idaho, yes. But he is a federal judge, and he struck down that law saying that it didn't meet the viability standard that has previously been set. Do you see this being the legal path to challenge?
Well, I mean, we've had other cases. We have another case in Arizona that's been upheld at the 20-week mark. So now we have a conflicting federal ruling, which I think means that somebody's got to settle which federal circuit court was correct, the one ruling on the case in Arizona or the law in Arizona and the one ruling on the law in Idaho.
But is it not part of the strategy? I mean, I would argue that it's fine for this to work its way up to the U.S. Supreme Court. Let's revisit Roe v. Wade 40 years later. Is that part of the
mission? It may be. And I mean, I would argue that, you know, we're basing, Roe v. Wade was written in 1973, before there was an active use of ultrasounds. I mean, before we had advertised pregnancy exams, pregnancy tests at home that you could tell in 48 hours whether or not you're pregnant or not. I think at some point we're going to say there's a responsibility issue here too.
Roby Brock from our content partner Talk Business Arkansas talked with two legislators, Ann Clemmer, a Republican from Benton, and Reginald Murdoch, a Democrat from Marianna, about the recent vetoes of the overriding of Governor Beebe's recent vetoes.
Support for TalkBusiness.net on Ozarks at Large is provided by Mitchell Williams Law, providing strategic counsel on a variety of sophisticated legal matters since 1954. Mitchell Williams Law Firm combines decades of diverse professional experience to clients across the U.S. Today, the firm employs nearly 80 attorneys from 4 offices in Arkansas, Texas, and New York. Online at MitchellWilliamsLaw.com. And Bank of the Ozarks, committed to helping business owners succeed by combining the tools and services businesses need with accessible experience and knowledge. More information at bankozarks.com. And the Electric Cooperatives of Arkansas. Diversity is the key to reliability and affordability. From the state's largest industrial user to a home at the end of a long country road, the Electric Cooperatives of Arkansas serve members with a stable supply of electricity backed up with fuel diversity. More at AECC.com.
And if you'd like to hear more from the conversation Roby had with the legislators, you can go to talkbusiness.net.
On the next Fresh Air, Mohsen Hamid talks about his new novel, How to Get Filthy Rich in Rising Asia. The answer for his main character is by passing off boiled tap water as expensive bottled mineral water in a city which closely resembles Lahore, Pakistan, where Mohsen Hamid lives. His previous novel, The Reluctant Fundamentalist, has been made into a movie. Join us.
Fresh Air tonight at 6 on KUAF.
This winter, a partnership between the University of Arkansas and the Ford Foundation comes to a close. During the tenure of the Ford Foundation International Fellowships Program, more than 500 international fellows came to the U of A campus to learn to speak and understand English better and become immersed in Northwest Arkansas life. The overall project ends this year after 12 years. The program was the single largest grant project in the history of the foundation, sending 4,000 fellows from 22 countries to 600 universities in nearly 50 countries. The local component of the Ford Foundation project lasted for more than 7 years and was a cooperative effort between the Ford Foundation and Spring International Language Center on the UA campus. Leah Bergman-Lanier is the director of Spring International. She says the fellows who came to Arkansas represented a certain portion of the overall group of Ford Foundation fellows.
And the group that we had is unique within that context. Mm-hmm. They are the students who are studying in country or in their region, so that they weren't having an opportunity for some of the things that those who went abroad did. They missed the opportunity for a really dynamic and different cross-cultural experience. They missed the opportunity of interaction with other fellows from other countries. They missed some of the opportunities for leadership and community service outside of their own communities.
Spring International worked hard to give their visiting fellows a thorough experience during their 9-week stay. Volunteer opportunities were lined up with local agencies and schools, women's shelters, the Boys and Girls Club. The fellows would visit city halls, TV stations, and neighboring towns. The activities were all arranged around the 2-month-plus immersion into English,
so that they had an experience of meeting each other, finding out that they all had similar kinds of problems and similar kinds of challenges, being underrepresented groups who would not have had this opportunity otherwise. And they had to adjust together.
Last month, Joan Dasson, the executive director of the Ford Foundation's International Fellowship Program, came to Fayetteville to help commemorate the conclusion of the partnership. She says the Ford Foundation embraced the Spring International Program part of the bigger project as an effort to foster internal equity.
What's so glorious about this program is that it enables fellows to do a lot of things at once. Study English and realize its value, not simply because it's the dominant language in the world, but because it's a means to communicate with other people from throughout the world. And frankly, they get a slice of America and a kind of America that, you know, we who live on the coasts don't often see ourselves.
Leah Bergman-Lanier with Spring International says the chance for the fellows to spend their 9 weeks in the middle of the country in a smaller setting than New York, Chicago, or Los Angeles offered a different kind of access.
We wouldn't have met the mayor of Los Angeles or of New York. You know, here we have access to the mayor. Here we have access to the State House. We have, it's, And in that sense, I think it's an incredibly valuable experience for the fellows as well as it is for ourselves.
Many of the field trips taken by the fellows while staying in Northwest Arkansas were volunteer-based. Alana Massey organized most of those exercises during the course of the project's run. While some excursions were intended to be fact-gathering opportunities, many included hands-on efforts with agencies involved in areas of particular interest to the fellows.
And the fellows tend to be involved with agriculture, with rural development, with social issues, especially that deal with women and families. So we would always visit Peace at Home Shelter, and anytime they have a volunteer opportunity, we would take part in that. Particularly around the holidays, they do a Santa Sack volunteer activity, and our students act as translators and helpers for that. And then that also empowers our Spanish-speaking fellows because they get to help as real translators.
Joan Dasson, the executive director of the national program, says the benefits work both ways. While the fellows are receiving an intense English course, there is a domestic benefit as well. The experiences, including trips the fellows took to Tahlequah and Little Rock, can help possibly eliminate biases against the United States that exist elsewhere.
For our fellows to encounter an America that's heterogeneous, that's diverse, that has history, that has a record of its own struggles, the way you see in the Cherokee Heritage Museum or at Central High School, this is profoundly moving to them. And I feel actually very moved as well by the fact that this then becomes an experience where they have a window into the real America.
All of the praise, all of the success of the program can beg a simple question. Why end the relationship between the Ford Foundation and Spring International? Joan Dasson says, like all projects, the Ford Foundation International Fellowship Program had an intended shelf life. It was always intended to end. She says the project actually was stretched beyond that initial end date with more money in 2006. She says now it's time to concentrate on what lessons have been learned.
And in a nutshell, the lessons are that there is an enormous demand of people with what we think of as an IFP profile. That is to say, people who have struggled their whole lives. They don't have the financial resources to go to universities, even in their own countries, much less study internationally, but they have a burning desire to help in the social transformation of their societies.
Last month, the University of Arkansas, Spring International, the City of Fayetteville, and the Ford Foundation celebrated the success of the program with a banquet. Spring International, of course, will continue its curriculum as a professional academic center on the U of A campus. Leah Bergman-Lanier says they'll continue to integrate many of the ideals developed through the Ford Foundation partnership.
We will continue to do the community service aspects. We will continue to do more leadership training because we learned in this process that this wasn't just something valuable for the IFP fellows, but rather to our community as a whole. And so we do more interactive work with community organizations, and we don't want to see those things end. So the seeds have been planted because of this program, and I think that that extension of the ripples in the pond, so to speak, is valuable to Fayetteville, and it's also valuable to us as an institution because it sets us apart.
You can learn more about Spring International by going to a link at our webpage, ozarksatlarge.com.
It's Wednesday, March 13th, 2013, and this is Ozarks at Large. I'm Antoinette Grajeda, and joining me now is Becca Martin Brown, features editor at Northwest Arkansas Newspapers.
It's got something to do with a monkey and tigers.
Your entertainment suggestion for today?
Yes.
Okay.
Intrigue Theater in Eureka Springs, which is illusionist Sean Paul and medium Julian, apparently have a capuchin monkey that they've used in their act before.
Oh, okay.
And he's coming out tonight for a special fundraiser at 7:30 for Turpentine Creek.
Oh, great.
They've been moving more tigers. I think they may be down to the last ones.
Really?
And this is expensive, moving tigers and building habitat for tigers and taking care of tigers. So the fundraiser is tonight at 7:30 at 80 Mountain Street, and tickets are $24.95 to $29.95. I believe that their suggested tagline for it was that one monkey could change the lives of all these tigers. So, sure, why not?
Why not?
And then there are Dangerous Ponies in town tonight.
I don't know how I feel about this.
It's a band.
Oh, okay.
From Philadelphia, and they're performing tonight at the Lightbulb Club.
Okay.
And according to Kevin Kinder, our music writer, they call their music indie rock pop psychedelic dance your face off music.
I know exactly what that sounds like.
See? Their show with Martin Bemberg and Native American starts at 9 o'clock, and tickets are $5.
All right. Thank you, Becca. Becca Martin Brown is features editor at Northwest Arkansas Newspapers.
This is Ozarks at Large. By day, Wiley Holt works as an assistant bank manager and teller. But in his off hours, he's an aspiring comic artist. Ozarks at Large's Jacqueline Froelich takes us to meet him at his home studio. Warning, two pugs are also involved in this story.
Come on, Oscar. Pug Oscar is 6. He's tiny and inscrutable. Mola is 3, much bigger, too many treats, and really expressive. They live with their humans, Wiley Holt and his spouse, Rachel, in a tidy little ranch house in Johnson. It's President's Day today, and because Wiley, who is 29, works at the Bank of Fayetteville, the cute little train branch, he has the day off. And of course, he's been in his studio working.
Come on.
Oscar and Lola lead the way. The studio is equipped with a drafting board, library, framed artwork, sketches, and lots of comic art books.
Oh, I mean, I've been drawing pictures, I guess, since I was little. You know, I remember, you know, sitting around on summer days, you know, with the windows open and just drawing cartoons or drawing, you know, monsters were big, dinosaurs, you know, astronaut kind of stuff.
Wiley grew up in Fayetteville, entertaining his grade school and church buddies with funny cartoons. His good humor and warmth comes from being raised in a large blended family.
I'm the middle child of 3 brothers. And then after my youngest brother turned 18 and was attending college, my parents decided to adopt a little girl from China who became Lily. I guess she was Lily before then, but then we officially named her that. And then a couple years, I guess about a year and a half later, they went back to China and adopted my second little sister, Anna. And then a couple years later, they went back to China and adopted. I also, the 2 girls are 10 years old now. I also have a 4-year-old little brother named Nathan, also from China.
His dad works at Hope Cancer Resources and his mom is an RN. Wiley also has 5 nieces and nephews, so family gatherings are wild but fun. He enjoys creating greeting cards for family birthdays and holidays. He also does photorealistic portraiture and greeting cards on commission. 10 years ago, he was on schedule to secure a degree in English with a minor in art at the University of Arkansas, entering his 3rd year, thinking about becoming a teacher, when a routine visit to his endocrinologist, he has type 1 diabetes, changed everything.
And he asked, hey, there's a lump on your throat. Have you noticed that? To which I said, oh, yeah, that's been there. What, you know, that's fine, I guess. You know, he's like, well, you know, let's get this checked out. And then after some tests, a couple different tests were run, and then it turns out that I was diagnosed with thyroid cancer.
After 2 painful surgeries and radiation therapy, Wiley had to drop out of school. He was exhausted. Treatment, however, was a success.
And so I ended up leaving school with hopes of going through and finishing. But, you know, I ended up, you know, getting married soon thereafter.
Life was beckoning, not school. He and Rachel have carved out a sweet life. She's in e-commerce, and he's an assistant bank manager, which allows him time to pursue his comic art in the evenings and on weekends. Oscar and Lola lead us back to the living room, where Wiley keeps another drawing board where he works, while Rachel and the pugs watch television in the evenings. He says his biggest influence is The Far Side, those crazy comics created by syndicated artist Gary Larson.
I mean, and that's kind of, I think, why I prefer more of a single frame comic, is because, you know, you have one shot. You know, you don't get a setup. There's no, you know, let's work towards the punchline here. It's, you know, here it is. Here's this little window into this world, and, you know, what's funny about it, or what's out of place, what's going on. And that's, I mean, that always just intrigued me, to where it's like, you know, it's limited number of tools, but I mean, it's still, you know, it's still telling a whole story. And that's, I always, you know, was just fascinated by that.
Wiley Holt has shown his work a little at the Arts Center of the Ozarks and posts it on his Facebook page, but mostly he just works.
It all starts off usually just with a rough sketch while I'm sitting at work, or if I have an idea, what I'll do is I'll just do a quick little superficial sketch of kind of the idea, and then I'll let that sit, because I might think something's funny in the moment, but then I'll go back to it to make sure. I'll get a second opinion from my wife, and so then what the process that I do is I go ahead and I measure everything out on paper, and I like being able to take that with me. You know, you can't take your computer with you to go sit and have a cup of coffee and draw on it. So I like being able to take my sketchbook and getting everything drawn out and then inked up, at which point I will then scan it into the computer and add the different tones and hues to it.
And captions. Funny captions. We sample some.
We have Mrs. Potato Head on the phone saying, "Please hurry, my husband, he fell. There are body parts everywhere." And in the background, obviously, you can see he's taken a tumble and is all out of sorts.
Okay, read that.
We have Abraham Lincoln playing with Lincoln Logs saying, you know, "I love these things," you know. And we have...
How kosher dills are made.
Exactly.
Okay, so describe what...
We have three rabbis sitting around a cucumber plant. One of them very, very carefully, you know, cutting the cucumber from the vine.
And circumcising a pickle cucumber.
Basically, yeah. I mean, it's base humor. It works. It's
fail. What else do you have? These are really funny. You flipped through the pug cartoon.
Oh, yes, of course. Here, I added the dialogue digitally on this one, but, you know, Oscar was my inspiration for this one. So it's a pug at a bar, you know, showing his ID and explaining that, well, in dog years, you know, he's 32 in dog years, you know. So whether his ID says that or not, they age a little differently, you know. We have a cat therapist saying, you know, "Thank you." It's basically a cat intervention. So a lot of cats are sitting around semicircle, and they've focused out the one. He's saying, "Thank you for coming, Mr. Wiggles. You should know that everyone here loves you, and we're all concerned about your reckless use of catnip." to continue with the almighty reference here, we have God kind of looking bleary-eyed, and he's holding a coffee cup that says, "I apologize for Mondays."
Oh, the poodles.
We have two poodles sitting side by side, and below there's a caption. One says standard, the other says automatic. And those are your poodle options.
Great drawings or expressions are poodle-like. Kind of vacant poodle.
I mean, I think I definitely have more. I try more to look for the funny side, because, I mean, there's just so much craziness out there, you know. And if we can't find some kind of way to laugh about it, then, you know, then life tends to be kind of dull and boring. And so it always kind of helps to have maybe a dry or maybe a little darker sense of humor, but, you know, to keeping it in check, so that way, you know, you're not just, you know, ruining your day and others' day, you know.
Wiley says he's developing and focused on a series of animal comics, anthropomorphic commentary on our booming addiction to pets and the unwitting roles they play in our lives. So in between managing the bank branch, doting on his big family, and tending to the pugs, Wiley Holt is building a portfolio of images to submit for feature syndication, and he's chosen a title for his work.
Let's see. I was thinking, because, you know, I'm from Arkansas, you know, I've been raised here, so I wanted to name my comic strip The Natural State.
The pugs seem to like that. Oh, you went in on that?
Well, it just pushes them out of the way.
Can you make some pug sounds? Grunting their approval. Perhaps someday you'll see pugs, poodles, and people posing and philosophizing, according to Fayetteville comic creator Wiley Holt, in the funny papers. For Ozarks at Large, I'm Jacqueline Froelich.
We've posted a slideshow of Wiley Holt's comics on the Ozarks at Large website. That's ozarksatlarge.com. And to connect with the artist, you can visit him on Facebook. This is Ozarks at Large. I'm Kyle Kelms. With me is Daniel Hintz, who is the Executive Director of Downtown Bentonville Incorporated. Welcome back.
Well, thank you very much, Kyle. How are you doing today?
Very good. In another lifetime, you were a chef. Is that correct?
Well, I wouldn't necessarily call myself
a
chef.
You prepared food for others to eat.
I prepared food for others. I've trained under some very, very cool people. But the bottom line is I love food.
Okay.
Yes.
And the reason I bring that up is because there is food to be eaten.
Yes. And, yes.
And you have some events coming up in Bentonville. Some of these started last year with the James Beard Foundation, and they've been rolling along.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think what was really exciting when we first sort of embarked on our culinary strategy, which started in earnest in 2009, was focused on primarily our farmers market to start out. Because if you know where your food comes from, you can create wonderful things from that. And so we've seen a significant growth within our Bentonville farmers market. In that strategy, we started to recruit restaurants to the downtown area that had direct ties with who and what they were with the local food scene. So a lot of our restaurants locally source, and I think we're really excited about continuing to strengthen those connections between our farmers and our produce folks and our restaurants. So I think the results of some of these things, for example, the Washington Post just listed our culinary scene as the in thing for 2013.
Yeah, let me ask you about that briefly. Can you in any way measure what that means? I mean, we know that if you're mentioned in the Washington Post as one of the places to be and emerging, you get a nice bump, you get some buzz, people talk about it, you feel good. Is there any way to measure what that means?
Well, it fills your... the cockles of your heart.
Sure, sure. I mean, but it's never bad.
No, it's never bad.
But can you trace, like, someone, oh, well, I read this in the Post. And
Well, I think we've heard, especially with travel writers, you know, and food writers getting on their radar screen, our growing relationship with the James Beard Foundation. Chef Matt McClure, who is the executive chef over the Hive, has gotten some great press in Southern Living. Tuscan Trotter had received Best New Restaurant and Best Chef in AY Magazine and got another nod of recognition from the Arkansas Times. So we have restaurants that are receiving local, state, and national attention. And I think that only supports folks saying, hey, I can go to Crystal Bridges or I can go to 21C. I've got other opportunities going on. Then we look at, once again, the regional offerings. I mean, there's some wonderful chefs and wonderful culinary experiences all over Northwest Arkansas. Culinary tourists look for those type of things. They look for those key pieces of cultural opportunities, but they want to know what's the real taste
of
a region. And boy, I tell you, if there is a region that is making some things happen, I mean, I'm excited about downtown Bentonville, but I'm even, you know, more excited about the whole region and what everybody collectively is coming together to do. For a foodie, it is very tasty. All pun intended.
Ah, yes. Uh-huh.
Yeah. And then you take Crepes Paulette, for example. We have some great Sticks and Bricks restaurants, some wonderful talent. But Crepes Paulette is a food trailer doing really unique product. They were just named as one of the top 10 food trailers of the South by Deep South Magazine. So I think you have some really interesting talent, some really interesting offerings. And my hope is we're contributing solidly to what's happening here in Northwest Arkansas.
Mm-hmm. We talked about the art scene a week ago in Northwest Arkansas, Bentonville. Mm-hmm. Is a culinary scene the same? Can it build the same way?
Mm-hmm, absolutely. I mean, they don't call it the culinary arts for nothing.
Right.
You know? And I think when you see things like Crystal Bridges and what they're doing at 11, you see what
their restaurant.
And the restaurant and what they're doing at 21C Museum Hotel and the Hive. They're pairing both that art and that culinary experience, and it's a powerful pairing. So you see what's happening with our downtown restaurants, and many of them, like the Press Room, for example, incorporates art into their space. T.H. Benton's incorporates art into their space, even Tuscan Trotter.
And now you have Table Mesa moving. They're in Bentonville and Fayetteville.
Correct. And so you have this expansion, and they're looking at art and the experience and what's happening on the plates. It is a beautiful marriage, and I think one of the things that commending all those restaurateurs and those chefs in the downtown area is that they understand that this is part of the Bentonville experience now, and they're trying to figure out ways to tie the art on the plate with the art on the walls and also music, as we talked about a couple weeks ago, how we're trying to incorporate live music and live performance into a lot of these spaces as well. A lot of this is a big experiment. How does it work together, and what makes most sense?
Can you tell us briefly about the James Beard relationship with Bentonville and how that all works?
Yeah. About a year and a half ago, we contacted James Beard Foundation wanting to figure out a way to make some of those ties, those connections. And they have been wonderful supporters and mentors, resources for us as we look to grow sort of the culinary experience of downtown Bentonville. Even in so much as that we have a special membership within our organization, our culinary membership, that when you join that membership, we actually pay for a membership to James Beard Foundation. So if you're a foodie, you're getting all of their inside scoop and what's going on, the Beard Bites and all those different kind of information, and you get to participate in specialty ticket discounts. And we do these things called Backstage Downtown specialty events that mix food and music in some of our downtown restaurants. You know, you get information, an inside scoop on all the culinary scene in downtown Bentonville. So that's one of the ways that we're partnering with the James Beard Foundation.
One last question that's put you on the spot. What's a food that many people don't like that you think they should try again? Because you're a self-described foodie.
Yeah. I think reinventing the relationship with Brussels sprouts.
Really?
Yeah. Roasted Brussels sprouts are beautiful. Mm-hmm. And then beets.
Oh, now beets.
Yeah.
As my colleagues will tell you, beets are in my top three foods of all time.
Beets are great. Beets. Yeah. They taste good, and they're also beautiful.
Yeah.
Brussels sprouts.
And they're very good. They're a superfood.
They are a superfood, absolutely. But I think Brussels sprouts, you know, we have a long way to go to reinvent that relationship. But if anybody has, you know, roasted Brussels sprouts with a little bit of grilled pork on top of that, especially grilled pork from a local vendor like Mason Creek Farms or somebody like that, it is beautiful.
I had them from David Lewis once at a fundraiser, and he had a bit of cinnamon on top of them, I think.
Interesting.
And that's the first time I've had a Brussels sprout and liked it.
If you do roast a Brussels sprout, it does sort of have a nutty smokiness to it, and so I could totally see why cinnamon would make a little sense.
Okay. Mm-hmm. All right. Brussels sprouts and more can be found at?
Information about all kinds of food events, downtownbentonville.org, or you can give us a call anytime at 479-254-0254.
Thank you, Daniel.
Thank you.
This is Ozarks at Large. The Gregoire Mare Quartet will perform two concerts Saturday night at the Walton Art Center in Fayetteville as part of the Starlight Jazz Series. Mare is a Swiss-born harmonica player who will be performing in Fayetteville for the first time. After studying at the Superior Conservatory of Music in Geneva, he moved to the United States to study music. Mare recently spoke by phone with Robert Ginsberg, host of Shades of Jazz here on KUAF. During their conversation, they talked about Mare learning to play the diatonic harmonica as a child.
I started pretty late. My family is kind of a musical family. My father's a musician. My brother is a musician. And I was also into music, I mean, probably since the day of my birth. But I never really pursued it very, very seriously. And then when, as a teenager, that's when I started to be more serious about it, and I picked up the harmonica then.
And the harmonica is really what led you into a life and a career in music, is that right?
Yeah, totally. First I started playing blues with the diatonic instrument, and then I picked up the chromatic about 2 years later. Started studying in Switzerland, decided to come to the U.S., to New York in particular, to study at the New School, and once I was there, I met a lot of people, started playing a little bit, and wanted to see if I could stay a bit longer after I was done with school. I started to see that I was indeed able to make a living as a musician, and I could stay in the U.S., which was much more exciting in terms of the people I could meet and the people I could play with and learn from. And so I decided to make that effort and try to stay, and it worked out.
In terms of teaching an instrument, I would imagine there would be some challenges as a harmonica player, in as much as it's not an instrument that you see people flocking to like the piano or a saxophone. So,
it's an instrument that almost everybody has at home, you know, whether it is by accident or just intentional. It's just something that it's one of those cheap instruments. I'm talking about the diatonic harmonica that everybody, somehow owns, and then it's just a matter of really being able to play it. And the chromatic is kind of another instrument, but it's already the first step. It's just there, and people, instead of just blowing in it and just playing some something completely random, it'd be nice if, you know, they could pick it up and really play a melody. So just like any instrument, it's good. Got its beauty, but it's also something that is highly accessible because it's relatively cheap.
With some notable exceptions, jazz and really even popular music in general have not produced that many superstars whose instrument is the harmonica. You know, in the United States, it's, as we said, it's mostly associated with blues. Who were the instrumentalists that inspired you, specifically harmonica players, but also more generally just any musicians or vocalists?
Well, if I take the harmonica first, of course, it's going to be Toots Thielemans and Stevie Wonder. And they are huge, I mean, gigantic for everybody who picked up their instrument after them. But I've never really tried to copy them and try to really play exactly what they were playing on the instrument. I always was trying to find something a bit more personal. So the other musician that I really, really listened to and highly influenced me were Wayne Shorter, Kenny Garrett, Steve Coleman, and Miles Davis, Coltrane.
Horn players.
Yeah.
That's interesting. What about, can you tell me the impact of people like Charles Lytton and, say, Howard Levy? And I mean, there are some characters in the history of this instrument. Max Geldray.
Right, right. I mean, Charles, I used to go in his house every Tuesday to, because we had this session that was kind of set up at his house with other harmonica players, and we would just kind of meet and play and just enjoy this moment together and harmonica playing, just something that nobody got to see and that was very enjoyable for everybody present. So I have a tremendous amount of respect and admiration for him. He was also really, really nice and generous. He taught me how to repair my instruments. He taught me a lot of things. So he's coming from like the old school, so he knows how to build an harmonica basically almost. And he kind of showed me and everybody else that was there how to do that.
And just in the way of background, Charles Lytton, and that, I don't think many people realize, this is an American virtuoso, classical and jazz harmonica player.
Right.
He flourished in the 40s and the 50s.
Exactly.
And he was quite a producer and recording engineer as well.
Exactly.
And these sessions, I read about these sessions, Greg, where they just sounded like, oh, what I would have given to be there every Tuesday afternoon. He had these sessions at his apartment.
Exactly. For years. I mean, I came rather late, like when he was a bit old already. Like,
he passed away.
But he was in top shape. I mean, he could play just better than anybody in the room. But because he's been doing it for many, many years.
Mm-hmm.
And when I came to New York, it was hard for me to meet anybody. And finally, I think I met William Gallison, who kind of told me that there was this session there.
You know, one of the things I have to tell you that I really admire about your artistry is your ability and your willingness to embrace very diverse forms of music, whether they be lush and radiant sort of melodic forms or pop idioms or even more experimental and edgy things like the stuff I've heard you do with, I'm not sure how he pronounces his name, Pierre Audette?
Pierre Audette.
Thank you.
I mean, for me, that's what makes things in music really exciting, is to be able to always challenge myself and be in situations that are really challenging. And also just bring beauty. Like, it's all about whatever is going to touch my heart and be really sounding true and honest, really, completely honest in terms of music, in terms of sounds, and in terms of emotion.
Well, what should we expect in terms of your performance here on the 16th?
You know, I think the best way for me to describe is that music speaks louder than words, but it's going to be more open. It's not just going to be jazz and just that's all they should expect. They should expect something a bit more open to whatever the world offers in terms of colors, sounds, and emotion. So it's kind of a mix of world music with jazz, I would describe.
The Gregoire Mare Quartet will perform at 7 and 9 Saturday night at the Walton Arts Center in Fayetteville. Mare recently spoke by phone with Robert Ginsberg, host of Shades of Jazz, which can be heard every Friday and Saturday night at 10 here on KUAF.
Ozarks at Large is underwritten in part by the Walton Family Charitable Support Foundation. Walton Arts Center presents an Irish celebration with flutist Sir James and Lady Jeannie Galway Thursday night at 7. Just in time for St. Patrick's Day, the show will feature Irish jigs and folk songs, along with selections from Debussy, Mozart, and others. Tickets and more information available at waltonartscenter.org or 443-5600. And support for Ozarks at Large comes, in part, from the University of Arkansas's Women's Giving Circle.
A listener-supported service of the Department of Journalism and Fulbright College of Arts and Sciences at the University of Arkansas. This is KUAF 91.3 FM, Fayetteville, Rogers, Fort Smith, Waldron.
Down in Scott County.
Mm-hmm.
Interesting. I don't know if this is still the case, but several years ago I interviewed someone about bears in Arkansas.
Uh-huh.
Scott County is where more bears were harvested during bear hunts than any other county in Arkansas.
Two things. One, I don't think I've ever heard the term harvested.
I didn't
or,
know what. Yeah.
Yeah. Is that a thing?
Shot, killed, whatever.
Okay. Hunted?
Hunted.
Okay.
Would work, yes.
Okay. Also, was there? Did he tell you if there was a reason why that
well,
was?
No.
No.
I mean, if he did, I have since forgotten. I just remembered because he presented it in asking me which county I thought, and Scott never entered my mind.
Oh.
Now, this has been several years ago.
Sure,
perhaps
it might be different
right.
now.
And I don't even remember the number because I think it's a very limited bear hunt in Arkansas.
Sure.
I'm not sure.
Okay. Good to know.
I'm talking about things now that I really don't know a lot about.
Fun fact for the day.
Yes, vague memories.
Vague memories.
Plenty of music coming up over the next few days on Ozarks at Large,
yeah.
appropriate since a lot of you, not all of us, but some of us, will be experiencing spring break next week.
Right.
Public schools, universities will be out. So,
mm-hmm.
But today in the Furman Garner studio, we're going to have some St. Patrick's music.
We are.
That we're going to hear on Friday. We've got the Vines Brothers.
Mm-hmm. Vine Brothers,
will,
yeah.
Vine Brothers, who we'll hear tomorrow on the show.
Yes, we will.
And then another band from Adams Collins.
Right.
They have a brand new CD coming out later this month.
So plenty of music to be heard.
Right. If you have any suggestions of musicians that you'd like to hear live in our studio.
Yeah, let us know, because I know there's lots of local bands out there, some that are starting, some that are travel a lot, so we don't realize that they're still in the
right.
area, things like that. If you have any suggestions, you can contact us at, send an email
mm-hmm.
at ozarksatlarge@gmail.com.
And next week, also during next week, we're going to, because we're getting closer to spring, we're going to give you some movie ticket, a chance to win movie tickets throughout the week next week.
Yes. We got some, I think we'll have some fun shows next week, actually.
Yes.
Planning on having some spring stories for people with spring coming. I know
right.
the warmer weather this weekend I'm very excited about.
Very excited.
Very excited about the warm weather.
And also want to let you know that I believe this apparently is the part of the show where I just talk about things that I kind of know.
Well,
I believe,
on a roll now.
I believe that's right. I believe we're going to also again this year have tickets to see the Northwest Arkansas Naturals. Their season will begin
all
in
right.
April, so we'll have some of those movie baseball combos that we gave away last spring
oh,
and summer.
Good. Looking forward to that.
Okay. If I've made any incorrect statements here, I will let you know tomorrow when Christina is with me.
Yes.
You'll be absolved.
I will be gone.
Ozarks at Large is a production of KUAF. I'm Kyle Kellums.
And I'm Antoinette Grajeda.
Have yourself a safe Wednesday.